Hello and welcome to Talking Capital. I'm Ian Barnard, CEO of CapGen. Each month, I am joined by a member of our investment team or a guest from one of the investors in our universe to talk about the investment themes and opportunities available today to family investors. What is CapGen? CapGen is an independent private investment office for families with strategic wealth. Our clients are sophisticated, internationally minded investors. We provide strategic CIO, discretionary, advisory, and other value-add services. Our team sources investment opportunities and ideas across all asset classes all around the world, from portfolios to individual investment ideas, allowing our clients to make the most of their capital. In summary then, this is a podcast where we discuss the questions playing on the minds of sophisticated long-term investors. Do subscribe if that sounds up your street, and you'll enjoy a new episode published on the first Thursday of each month. Welcome to Talking Capital, to the second of our three-part series covering the energy transition. You'll recall in the last episode, my colleague Donald McFarlane joined to talk to us about the opportunity from a very broad perspective, leading as he does our portfolio management team and thinking about asset allocation and strategy. This time, I'm delighted to be joined by Mario Acquistapace, director in our investment research team, who is out there day by day trying to find really, really good investment managers for our clients, who's going to talk about this opportunity and the search process and the product that we ended up selecting. And as we'll come to hear in a moment, it's been quite a long journey and he's been riding that all the way through. But before we get to that, we're going to zoom out a little bit, Mario. And can I ask you, in a way, as a bit of a segue from the conversation I had with Donald last time, to start a bit with where we ended with him, which is for you to talk about how you see this energy transition opportunity, what strikes you, your reflections. We're going to come on to talk a bit about your search process, but I'd like to start out with you talking to us about how you see the opportunity, what you've learned in doing that, what you see in front of you.
Sure. Thank you, Ian. I think at a high level, the energy transition is a long-term theme driven by, you know, a combination of policy support, technological innovation, and this very serious capital reallocation. Donald set out the big picture case in the previous episode very well. This is effectively a structural shift in how the economy is powered. And that's moving from older fossil fuel-based economy to a new one based much more on renewables. And importantly, this change and evolution is not going to happen overnight. And it's our belief that, you know, over this period, however long it takes, there will be plenty of investment opportunities. I think when considering or thinking about the energy transition theme, it's easy to immediately think about renewable energy like wind and solar. I think that's naturally where our minds go to. But it's actually so much more than that. And, you know, as we're seeing, this market opportunity includes the whole energy complex and beyond, covering, you know, a wide range of sectors and subsectors, you know, everything from utilities, infrastructure, renewables, as I mentioned, to the slightly more, I guess, adjacent or energy-linked sectors that you might not think immediately think about, like shipping, technology, autos, and mining. So if we just take electrification, so this is, you know, one of the big sort of sub-themes about the electrification of everything from our cars to our homes, the electrical grids. Demand today is being heavily driven by data centers, as you can imagine. But there are other strong structural forces such as industrial automation and robotics. And, you know, what we've seen is the winners here are perhaps the more unlikely heroes that, you know, provide the electrical connection solutions. So think about, you know, your sort of your wiring and the cooling and heat management systems that, you know, even today as I'm sat in this office, there's just, you know, plenty of this stuff all around me that you don't sort of think about. And another company that we saw last year was Sandvik. They are a Swedish company that produce all sorts of products and solutions for rock excavation. So, you know, drilling and processing, and that's about extracting the natural resources that will be required to build all of this stuff. Ultimately, there will be, you know, plenty of these winners and losers that we think.
Yes, and I guess I'm going to say again something that I recall saying on the series we did on natural capital with a little earlier, and also the episode I did last time with Donald, which is to just say again that the sustainability, ESG, green dimension is certainly there, but it isn't, and for us has never been at all anything like 100% of how we see this opportunity. You've talked there, Mario, about electrification, and clearly there is just, we see this all the time, as you say, just greater consumption of electricity as the ultimate form of means by which we consume and use energy, or we perhaps more accurately, in remembering our physics, where we see energy transformed. So that is a clear secular shift that comes alongside, runs in parallel in a way with the sustainability one, but is actually quite separate. You know, as with parallel lines, they run together, but they never touch. And then there's an additional parallel rail, which I think has come into prominence more recently. And again, we touched on that last time. And I think we talked about that also on our natural capital episode with Dimitri, which is just about resilience and independence of production. So, you know, whilst, for example, in the UK, we're having a very, very live debate about whether we do or we don't take advantage of the hydrocarbon reserves in the North Sea, that debate will take the path that it will take. But it's still ultimately a temporary declining solution. And if you're going to rely on hydrocarbons, it does just build in a lot of weakness into your supply chain. And if there's a takeaway from the Ukraine war and the Iran war, and as we look into the future, possible conflicts, that resilience, local production is this third and important parallel driver of this energy transition. So where am I going with this? You know, mitigating climate change is clearly a part of it, Mary, but it's by no means at all the whole thing.
Absolutely. You know, I think you touched on it there. Energy independence is clearly going to be such a big sort of theme that will play out over the years following, you know, the events of this year and previous years. And I think that's, you know, we see that creating all sorts of winners and losers, and we believe that's really going to ultimately provide a very good opportunity set for those at the forefront of these sort of energy markets and this ecosystem. You know, what is interesting in the context of the broader equity portfolio is that this theme is increasingly appearing across a wide range of our global equity managers, particularly as the AI-driven build-out translates to real physical energy demand. Many of the managers are now identifying these bottlenecks with trades such as the gas turbine manufacturers. I think like GE Vernova or Siemens Energy becoming widely owned as the market recognizes their role in providing reliable, dispatchable power for data centers. That is to say, power that you can sort of turn on and off, as opposed to intermittent power like wind or solar, which you can't always control. Why do I bring this up? You know, I think because this is precisely where an energy specialist adds value. The manager that we're going to talk about actually identified this dynamic much earlier, building positions in names like Siemens Energy as early as 2023, well before the trade really became consensus last year, and benefiting meaningfully as the order backlogs, you know, extended into the 2030s. can't get your hands on one of these gas turbines for love nor money, really. And the share price has re-rated significantly. And it's this ability to connect structural demand trends to specific company winners ahead of the broader market. This is a strong example of why, you know, we think a dedicated sector specialist is important alongside a more generalist equity exposure.
Yeah, and I think there's a sense in which, to some extent, this has been a bit clouded by the ESG wave, which is clearly now behind us, it is subsequently being called greenwashing. You know, the slightly blind rush to label things as green, which some of which wasn't true, but it rather narrowed the debate. But in a way, it created a little bit of mist that obscured some other much more substantial and well thought through strategies that were going on. And even now, I think when you say energy transition, it's still a little bit clouded by that greenwashing, overzealous ESG pursuit that is now behind us. And the point I think you made as we were running into this discussion, Mario, is of course that got reflected in how people were bidding up stocks. And so, you know, take your example of Siemens. Siemens could found itself on the wrong side of a slightly blind greenwashing strategy, but a more thoughtful energy transition one sees the opportunity that's there. And you were talking, Mario, about how the market's perception of what the opportunity looks like has evolved, how that's affected relative pricing of stocks. And maybe I'm going to take that opportunity to move us on to the second topic, which is about the search process, Mary, that ended up, you know, with the choice that we made. But I wonder if you can set it up a little bit, both in terms of when it started and what it was initially you were looking for.
Sure. I think this is a great example of how we don't always follow the same process arc. What do I mean is, you know, in this instance, the solution that we ended up with and have today was not necessarily the one we originally set out to find. So our work really started back in early 2021. If you remember, we were entering this more inflationary environment, and we were thinking, here at the firm, sort of exploring ways to protect client portfolios from this inflation risk. So we'd begun speaking with several commodity traders, and we spent some time looking at natural resource equity strategies, anything that might complement our existing inflation protection, like the trend following strategies and passive commodity exposure. And what really spawned out of this work was a greater interest and an understanding of this broader energy transition theme that you just described.
I'm going to just jump in there, Mario, because I think this is a very, very interesting point that you make, which is, so we start out looking for ways in which to mitigate and protect client portfolios against inflation risk. And that initial search goes in two directions, one of which you're going to pursue, which is, well, we ended up discovering and then really quite liking the idea of investing with an energy transition mindset. But actually, when it came to the inflation protection, we came to a conclusion that a much cheaper, much more efficient way of protecting against inflation was simply to put in place a swap or warrant that allowed us to profit from five-year inflation being higher than the market was thinking it was when we put that particular trade on. So we looked at commodity producers, but we actually decided that if we were just after inflation protection, a cleaner way of doing that was simply to buy a very, very straightforward to sell inflation in the future, which we've done. But as part of that process, and I'll come back to you now, Mario, we came across this really rather attractive energy transition idea. So I'm passing the baton back to you.
Yeah, no, I think you described it perfectly. And that's just a great example of how fluid the investment team here is, and how we've sort of, you know, we learn from the managers and the ecosystem that we find ourselves in. And so I guess thinking about that, you know, conviction, as I described, that sort of began to build on this energy transition theme, how does that actually translate into a manager search? So we started quite deliberately with a very broad view of the opportunity set and then narrowed it down systematically to identify where we thought the best risk-adjusted expression of the theme might be. So we cast a wide net initially, not only to ensure that we had considered each different approach, but again, also for our own learning, we wanted to speak with as many market participants as possible. This also involved looking at over, I think it was 80 strategies across commodities, equities, some hybrid or multi-strategy funds. And what we did was we segmented the universe into key categories such as energies, metals, systematic strategies, and energy-related equities, and then began to apply the sort of these clear filters that we use to narrow down that funnel, like sufficient size. So thinking about assets under management and size of firm, length of track record and experience. Then we thought about the appropriate liquidity. So it was clear from the onset that this was very much a public markets opportunity. And in fact, elsewhere in the team, there was another sort of slightly different search going on, looking at the private space around energy infrastructure. But really from there, the process became more qualitative and manager-led. So we began taking extensive meetings with managers and really focused on, you know, repeatability of process and then things like institutional infrastructure. Again, going back to the sort of firm size, we leaned heavily on our allocator network. And this is something I've spoken about before, but you know, we conduct a number of reference checks and really, you know, speak with our wider network. And then, of course, the usual track record and business risk analysis that we do. And finally, we applied our internal framework to really, I guess, flesh out the highest conviction manager.
And tell me, Mario, about the criteria that helped you make your final choice, because you can only buy what's for sale. So we can't define what's out there. Others are taking that decision. We simply select from what's available. So you can only buy what's for sale. Clearly, you, in your search work, get a sense of what's out there. But I think also, as you do your search work, you, in a somewhat iterative way, you actually work out what the key criteria are that you will apply in order to make the selection from the range of opportunities. And clearly, a path, and we see this quite often, is a conclusion that no, there's nothing that quite meets the standard. So there have been, over the years, many searches we've undertaken that have led to, because you can only buy what's for sale, and if what's for sale isn't what you feel you need, then there's simply no upside to buying it. We did, in this occasion, make a buy. But Mario, can you talk about the criteria that as you were doing your search, you came to feel were really important? What was it that you thought would make a successful manager in this space?
So I guess after the kind of the quite long funnel process that I described before, I suppose the result was a short list of managers with strategies that actually looked and felt quite different to the one we have today. But you know, you had some trading equities in various parts of the energy market. You had others that were more of a kind of commodities futures focus. But ultimately, they were all looking to capture the same theme, just in different corners of the market, whilst taking varying degrees of risk. But I suppose to come back to your question, Ian, you know, what really differentiated the chosen manager was, you know, their ability to navigate both sides of the transition. You know, traditional energy, as we think about oil and gas and perhaps clean, like renewables, and we quite like that, and the ability to sort of express that through both equities and commodities, and most importantly, in a very risk-controlled manner. There are plenty of managers out there that sort of with strategies that had a risk profile that we weren't able to get comfortable with, particularly in the commodity space.
Mary, super helpful. So completely understand that. Can you talk a little bit about how you, in this particular context, I'm wary of generalizing, but how you thought about benchmarks? So did you start out with the target, if you like, being a benchmark, and you wanted to find something that you thought would most effectively outperform that benchmark? So did it lead, or was it something that followed? You found what you thought was the right team, the right group, the right strategy, and then you went looking for an appropriate benchmark to apply to make sure that indeed your hypothesis about this team was correct. That is, that they were winners.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's one that we've actually quite struggled with. I would say it's probably more the latter. The reality is the opportunity set is so broad, and it's very difficult to draw firm lines around it. It's especially if you sort of think back to 2021, 22, it's been continuously evolving, and frankly, it's quite inconsistently defined across the market. So you have all sorts of ESG mandates, you have all sorts of clean energy sort of products or passive investments. And then you've got your energy, your traditional energy products. It was easy to find an indice that captured a narrow segment of the theme, such as clean tech or renewables or utilities. But there was not really one single benchmark that accurately reflected the full investable universe, we felt. And so we really let ourselves sort of be led by the manager's strategy in this instance. And the solution was really not to rely on a single benchmark, but to use a pragmatic combination. So, we'll try and anchor to one of these thematic indices to sort of frame the opportunity set while also referencing global equities to reflect the real opportunity cost in the portfolios, recognizing that both are imperfect, and then I guess place a much greater emphasis on understanding, the underlying exposures of the drivers of return, and rather than judging performance purely on relative numbers.
And staying a bit with the craft of it, the technical side, can you just talk a little bit about the framework that you deploy with due diligence, Mary, how you sort of divide up big picture the work that you're doing in order to get to the point where you have the confidence to say to us, to the firm, look, I think this is a really, really good idea, and I think that we should be putting client money into this.
Yes, I've probably made it all sound very simple, but in reality, this is a process that takes several months at the least. But effectively, our manager selection process can be broken down into three quite distinct and equally important areas. So the first one is IDD, or investment due diligence. And this is where we will evaluate a fund's investment strategy, performance track records, portfolio construction, and really assess the capabilities of the investment team and understand whether, the fund can actually deliver on its sort of stated objective, be that a private equity buyout strategy or a futures trading hedge fund. The required skill sets are naturally very different. And second, we've got the ODD, the operational due diligence. So here we're trying to examine a fund's non-investment infrastructure. So looking at risk controls, compliance frameworks, technology systems, and really the sort of back office operations with the aim of trying to, I guess, identify any operational risks that could threaten the investment. And this will often involve engagement of third-party systems to conduct things like background checks as well. And then finally, the third area is the legal due diligence. And this will involve our in-house legal team, who will review fund documentation, draft side letters, and all to ensure that, the fund terms are fair and the structure is is sound and one that we are comfortable with, and importantly, suitable for our clients, and that generally investors are protected in a sufficient manner. And this is all done, I guess, before, you know, committing any capital.
Merrick, fantastic. Thank you. So let's move on to the third area of discussion, which is just to focus in on the product that eventually that you chose. So perhaps you can just start out by just telling us what it was and also how you got to that point.
Sure. So the manager we selected is called Clean Energy Transition, and the firm was founded and is led by Per Lekander, who spun his team out of Lansdowne Partners in 2021 and has been managing this strategy, I think, since 2015. You know, what stood out to us was the depth of specialist expertise and their ability to navigate the full energy ecosystem, to my earlier point of really wanting to capture the full opportunity set. The team is really led by Per Lekander. He has 30 years of experience across energy policy and regulation. He did a stint on the sell side as a utilities analyst and I think some consulting, and finally portfolio management. And we felt this shaped a unique perspective on the energy space. And he's supported by his co-portfolio manager, Eric Hogner, who we've spent a lot of time with and come to know quite well, and a small but specialist team of analysts across renewables, industrials, utilities, and commodities. The strategy itself is fundamental and research-driven. So the manager will combine a top-down macro sort of theme identification with sort of bottom-up company analysis. So in practice, what does that look like? You know, the team will effectively identify a theme. For example, a more recent one is Germany's 500 billion euro infrastructure and energy investment program. And then, you know, within that, they will explore particularly, you know, in this kind of renewables and grid build out. So I think names such as Nordex and Ørsted. And this process is, you know, is structured, repeatable. Effectively, they identify a theme, company selection, portfolio construction, and then I guess the ongoing monitoring. And we like this strategy during our initial underwriting. You know, we like the manager's ability to really invest across that full energy spectrum. Renewables, traditional energy, commodity, and infrastructure.
And can you talk a little bit about, Mario, about, without necessarily particularly naming, but just describe some of the runners up? Because I think it's easier to understand something by distinction against what didn't make it. So share with us what those choices look like. So if you could sort of profile some of the ideas that came close, but which you decided at the margin were not as well suited to what you were trying to achieve for us.
Sure. You know, we had a number of shortlisted candidates that were, you know, also trading equities, but perhaps in more specific parts of the energy market. So maybe a focus on solely oil and gas, or maybe utilities. And then we looked at strategies that were perhaps a little bit more commodity futures focused. So they were trading base metals and trying to benefit from the energy. So looking at the energy transition theme from that kind of base metals approach, or through that sort of lens. But ultimately it came down to, as I said earlier, you know, each strategy is sort of taking on a varying degree of risk. And this was quite early in our sort of understanding and building out the theme. And so we favored something that was much more risk controlled. And ultimately, you know, we preferred this long short strategy as this kind of all weather approach. You know, we felt it was just the right way to access that theme in a sort of earlier, more uncertain phase.
Mario, wonderful. Thank you very much indeed. I think time is probably up. So thank you Mario, for all that. We look forward next time to being joined by Per, and thank you very much for joining us. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
A link to Capgen's privacy notice and full terms can be found in this podcast summary description and on our website.